Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, your hostess, a poet from the website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that tonight's show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out our poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And I see on the board, I see Darkened Auras in LNP, and she says, yay, got my new speakers to hear tonight's show. Hello, LNP, and hello, Darkened Auras. It is good to see you in the chat room. Very cool. Glad you got your new speakers. And before I continue on, I'd like to welcome Mika to the show. Welcome, Mika. Glad you could be here. How's it going?
Hey, Pam. Great. I'm having a great night. How about you?
Oh, you know what? I'm doing great. You know, we had the 2 hours of awesome poetry with Laurent, and now we're going to have another 2 hours of awesome poetry. You know, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and, you know, other cool poets. And, you know, it just, life is good, busy. Well, as you know, life is busy. But nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Pam, you sound like you're underwater. I don't know what's going on.
Really? Do I still sound like that?
No, now you sound clear.
Okay. Okay, I think it's because sometimes I'm a very expressive talker sometimes. Like, I either, like, my hands are moving around or my head is bobbing back and forth, you know. And so I don't think my mouth always lines up with my phone speaker. So either that or there's some other technical issues. Doing good. And I would like to bring a guest on, area code 501. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please?
Oh, this is James.
Hey, James. Glad you could call in. How nice to have you here.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Going well. Me and my beer are quite happy.
Awesome. That sounds like a good night to me. Poetry and beer. I'm down with that. Very cool.
And me and
very
my wine.
Whiskey is better, but I'm out of whiskey.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff. Yeah, and I like regular whiskey, but I also like some of that flavored stuff, too. I don't know if you ever had that curveball whiskey where it kind of has that
screwball
flavor?
Screwball.
It's called curveball. With a K, K-U-R-V-E, and it's got a picture of a skeleton with, like, two spatulas, and it's got a smoky, almost barbecue flavor to it.
Oh, no, the stuff I get is peanut butter.
Oh, that sounds, I would like that. I'd like to try the peanut butter. Yum.
Yeah, it's called Screwball.
Oh, very cool. I'll have to give that a try. But you know what? I have to say, James, I am really glad you said something in LNP that you called in, because sometimes in after midnight, we get some strange ones calling in. And, you know, I mean, they like to make up.
No stranger than me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you know, the kind where I'm like, okay, if I can get Mika to read a poem and bring this person into the room to screen the call, I can find out if they want to say a limerick about their body parts or something like that.
Well, you remember when that person called in, like, trying to pretend like they wrote a famous rap song? Oh, my God.
Yes. Oh, James, my gosh.
Do you know Bobby Shmurda?
No. Yeah, yes, I do. Yes, I do. He went to jail for his rap song because he admitted to all the things he did wrong. Yep.
Yeah, so someone called in and read one of his songs, just read it, like, as if it was their poem. It was so funny. I was like, Bobby? Bobby Smyrna? Then they just hung up.
Oh, my God. Yep. You get all kinds of crazy stuff here. That's for sure. All kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah, we've had all sorts. But we've got a great lineup of poetry tonight. Our first prompts we're going to go into are rites inspired by this quote: "Poetry remembers that it was an oral before it was a written art." George Luis Borges. And I thought it'd be interesting to run an 8-spots-only contest and see what people got from that. So with that being said, I'll go ahead and grab the first poem and do.
It feels so innate when there's only 8 spots.
What's that?
I said it feels so elite when there's only 8 spots.
I know, right? Right? Like, like you're one of the chosen few. All right, Mika, your poem is up. Go ahead and give it a read.
Okay, this is called Firstborn. Sometimes I wonder where the first poem formed. Was it sleeping like a folded up cicada in dreamless ground, unearthed and cradled in its papery shell, home to our chorus of startled fires? Did one of us pull it, writhing and screaming from the cervix of the sea, scales slapping on a rocky shore as the sun cried out? Did we steal it from the mouths of birds, slitting the throat of their songs, pressing feathers to our lips? Not formless when we found it, discovered but not created. Plucked from the air, the right strings in our necks, as we craned our ears, nodding in amazement. End poem.
Great read there, Mika. I was very impressed with this write. First of all, the fact that you wrote in the idea of the first poem being birthed, and then matched that up with the fact that the first known recorded poet in history was a woman, who was a priestess and poet in ancient Mesopotamia. I'm stumbling over that word. But I really thought this was brilliant how what you did is you took individual metaphors and beautifully wove them together onto the extended metaphor. And I have to say, I don't know about other people, but I really have this obsession with the first of everything. Like, when was the first time, you know, somebody decided to, you know, crack open a coconut and eat it? When was, you know, the first, you know, everything, anything little thing, like you always think, what was that first moment? What led to that? You know, my favorite being the joke, what was the first moment somebody decided to pull on the udders of a cow and drink what came out? You know, it's just a fascinating.
That would be your
subject.
Main question.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But this is amazing. And I like how you compare, creating a poem to childbirth, to creation. And it's got a spirituality to it. And it reminds us that the creation of poetry is something that's very emotional, very can be painful. And at the same time, beautifully rewarding. Of course, a great opening. Sometimes I wonder where the first poem formed. And then I really like, did one of us pull it writhing and screaming from the cervix of the sea, scale slapping on a rocky shore as the sun cried out? Did we steal it from the mouths of birds, slitting the throat of their songs, pressing feathers to our lips? You know, and the idea that the poem was formless, discovered but not created. I like that, discovered but not created. And the idea that it was just waiting to be formed, and we found that way to do that. So, I mean, amazing write and very well done. And James,
thank you.
Your thoughts. You're welcome.
Well, you were so thorough in commenting on this piece. Definitely the idea that poetry is a universal force that just exists without us, and that we kind of just like tapped into it. Kind of an interesting thought.
I like that. Here. Yeah, the whole idea of, like what you had to say about it being a universal thought that we've tapped into. Very cool. And
that's exactly
Mika,
what I was trying to express.
Oh,
my
cool.
God, I went ahead of
cool.
you. I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead and say, if you'd like, go ahead and say more about your poem.
Oh, well, I love both of your guys' comments. Thank you so much. I think, like, music and poetry and things that really move us, it almost seems like we discover, common threads, but between us and the rest of humanity, that if you pluck them the right way, everyone feels it. And so, yeah, I think you guys are both spot on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad you were inspired. All right.
It's a well-written poem. It really is.
Absolutely.
Thank you, James. You know, James, my bad.
No, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that James was writing a different poem with me for the existentialism show, and then because I was getting inspired by what we were writing for that prompt, this one shook loose from me. So, actually, thank you, James, because, like, you helped me write this poem.
Hey, that's... You know, part of the creative process that working together kind of helps us both out.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really does help. It really does. That's why part of the reason I do like doing collaborations is because it does help shake things loose. That's for sure. So, all right. Well, up next we have Paradox by Patty Mike. And James, would you give that a read for us, please?
Oh, can I just comment, please?
All right, sure. I'll be gentle with you this time. So
don't piss her off, though.
All right, no problem. This is Paradox by Patty Mike. Cut gums bleeding from the tongue, spelled dripping from the stars, cascading, it's raining down, flowing, pouring, clinging to my forehead. Is the spoken art torn, ripped apart, and spilled out, then reversed, sliced, the pen with elegance, delicacy, gliding through right on a cross, like the surgeon's hand, steadied, equally measuring the pound of flesh. Colored parchment dripping in my mouth, succulent and sweet, bursting from my chest, stealing the 40 winks of my rest after walking 40 days in the desert, carrying my life tirelessly on my back until I cannot walk any longer, shining from the sun's heat, baking, boiling, burning my dry skin, sizzling the sweat off from my pores, then finally speaking the paradox spoken of my oral poetry to you. End poem. And Mika, your thoughts?
This is such a cool piece, especially for this particular prompt. I'm really glad that you read it the way you did, Pam, because even as I was reading it in my head, I was hearing it performed, and you did an excellent job. It's a piece that really is orally pleasing. Not orally. Oh, God, no. Ugh, damn it. Auditorily pleasing when you hear it read aloud. And I think it was made to be performed. I really like that the references that he pulls in speak to the burden that he's equating to this poem that finally at the end he gets to speak, the 40 days after the 40 winks that were stolen, referencing Jesus 40 days in the desert being tempted and not succumbing. And then the way that he carries his life on his back tirelessly and at the end of it outpours a poem. So it's like out of the suffering and out of all of this strife and burden and striving, poetry pours out. I thought it spoke kind of to that universal force, as we call it. And yeah, just written really, really in a way that flows and is perfect for performance.
It really was. And great observations there. And yes, it definitely was a performance piece. And James, your thoughts?
Well, the repeating theme throughout, it's just so fleshy. You know, the bleeding gums bursting from my chest. I mean, it's just, it's like this poetry is something that, like, physically erupts from you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A very visceral and almost an ugliness to it, but it's an ugliness that
it's almost gory, really.
Yes. Yep.
But yep. It really is a beautiful piece.
It is. It is.
I like the word you chose, erupting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and yeah, sometimes in poetry it can be like that. It can feel like it's erupting from us, and you know, that it rips us apart emotionally, you know, and that we have nothing else to focus on. I really like how he starts out. Well, first of all, I have to agree that I really like your choice that there, James, of the part you chose and how you commented on the visceral type ugly imagery, which works so well. And Mika definitely is a performance piece, which I'm glad somebody went in this direction, because honestly, I find that to me, like, there's so much poetry is meant to be performed. You know, I know there is specific, there is spoken word poetry, you know, there is rap, and those obviously are meant to be performed. But to me, every single poem should be read out loud, even if you're just reading it to yourself. Because honestly, on a technical level, if you read your poem out loud alone in your room or wherever you are, you're going to get a feel for what's right and what's wrong. But I love the short, impactful, hard-hitting lines, the flow of this, the extremely strong and visceral imagery. I like how it speaks on the whole idea of how physically and emotionally draining it is to write a poem. And I like that he started with the phrase cut gums, because it made me think of the whole idea of like a baby teething, getting their first teeth. So you're cutting your gums on the idea of writing poetry, and you're maturing in the idea of writing poetry. And then with I like the all the way through, but the end lines too, the paradox spoken of my oral poetry to you. So it goes from being the poet's words to then belonging to the person who interprets it as they see its meaning. So wonderful, right? Ooh. Very well done.
This might sound strange, but it kind of reminds me of Cronenberg and his body horror. Like, he deals with like the physical kind of
like.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I was interrupting you. I meant Dick. No, I was saying like you enter the machine and the fly emerges from you or something. Like, I totally get that connection for sure. Also, Pam, what you said about the baby teething and then at the end, the way that it's interpreted, that was such a cool connection. And it reminded me that the cut gums at the beginning is like a very visceral way to bring in that phrase, cutting your teeth. So that was a cool connection too. Sorry,
really
I'm interrupting.
It really is. Yeah, no, I have to agree. And you know what, James? Don't worry about expressing any weird thoughts, because, you know, it's like I say at the beginning, you know, here you can blur the lines, break the chains, and open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. Obviously a nod to Jim Morrison. But other than that, it's not just the poetry that I'm looking for those thoughts. It's also like, how do people interpret the poetry? And, you know, there's no right or wrong. I mean, there might be to the individual poet, but, you know, I mean, as far as making comments, I think it's cool to hear what people get out of a poem. So let's see here. All right. And up next we have Soft Landings by Stephen T. Wellman. And let's see here. Mika, yes. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Don't act like you were deliberating too long.
I know, right?
Okay, Soft Landings. And so we prepare. Another cold winter. Summer's first hue speaks, unraveling recitations. Fast-fading phrase like cold dewdrops running down chiseled cheeks. A cold chill in the air thaws the ice in my chest, reminds a rugged stone, a season of poetry, preludes. Nature narrates, few listen. Ethereal expressions ensue. Colors of the wind, paintbrush, the lamenting landscape. Beauty besets my tired eyes. September foreplay shimmers. Goldenrod glimmers, all an evaporating enigma. My equinox heart hiccups, briefly walks a tightrope, equally balancing daylight, a brief moment of grace. Shadows soon grow shorter. Shifting silhouettes shake hands. A myriad of watercolors flutter. Carpet-flaming forests ignite. A passionate fire burns brightly. Nature's orchestra gathers. A somber symphony ensemble. Rough drafts bleed seasonal stirrings. Magical, majestic moments. Tempered time trembles. Free-falling, fickle colors let go. Dance divinely on brisk breezes. Looking for soft places to land in a world gone mad. End poem.
Great read, Mika. And what a wonderful write by Stephen. I'm really glad that he was inspired. And James, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this poem.
Well, there's all these glorious things going on throughout this poem. But it all seems to pivot on this, these couple lines that says, nature narrates, but few listen. So all this magnificent things are going on, but so few people are attuned to it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, and that is so true. And, yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, and I like that you pointed out that those lines are really a pivotal point in the poem. So great observation. And, Mika, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, that was a cool comment, James, because I was actually going to skip right over those lines and not give them their due weight. And you made me reread it and reinterpret. So that was a really cool comment. I like when that happens. First of all, it was really cool how much alliteration he got in here. And that is both fun and challenging to read aloud when you're in front of people. But reading it in my head, it's like, oh my God, if I could have like been prepared and performed that, that would have sounded really cool. And I think, well, one, I like James' observation on the reread. And second of all, with that observation in mind, it's weird how every stanza seems to kind of contradict itself. And I think that in a way nature does that too. There's this constant arising and falling, birth and rebirth that's going on. And so the evaporating enigma of those moments that that just, they don't last, but you can catch them if you try, if you really, really pay attention, is very present in this poem. I like especially the kind of contradiction between passionate fire burns brightly, nature's orchestra gathers, a somber symphony ensemble. And it's like a passionate fire burning brightly, the carpet flaming forest igniting, and the orchestra all bring this crescendo of like sounds and images into your head. And then a somber symphony ensemble is like turning that on its head, because you don't, you're not thinking of those images and of passion being somber. But that is true to nature. It is true to how life is actually experienced. The fire, if it burns at all, burns brightly, but then is very quickly extinguished, and you're left with the ash of what remains. I thought it was really cool.
It is, absolutely. And I like what you had to say there, Mika. You know, the whole idea of the fire burning bright, but then extinguished quickly. And I like that you pointed out the juxtapositions within the poem. And that whole idea of how, you know, not only the poem, but not only poetry itself at times, but also nature and life is full of these contradictions. And I have to say that he used alliteration very professionally. Like, you know, alliteration is wonderful, but it's like any other poetic device. It can definitely be overused. I mean, and that's just my opinion. I mean, everybody feels different ways. My opinion is that most poetic devices need to be used with a gentle touch in order to really have the most impact. You know, and by no means am I a professional, but I really like the imagery and metaphors in this. I like how I've always found with Stephen's work that his language is oftentimes simple and straightforward, But at the same time, there's kind of this layeredness to it. Like, I couldn't help but think that maybe another cold winter, summer's first hue speaks, is not only the idea of actually the change from one season to the next, or the wish for one season to the next, but maybe another cold winter is the whole idea of having writer's block. And I could be wrong, but I can't help but wonder if it's the idea of having writer's block, and that summer's first hue speaks is when those first words just start coming out, that first hopeful glimmer of a poem. I really like my equinox heart hiccups, briefly walks a tightrope, equally balancing daylight, a brief moment of grazed shadows, soon grow shorter, shifting silhouettes, shake hands. There's something very philosophical in those lines that I feel like this poem actually would have worked really well, Mika, on Lawrence's show. Not any for specific
yeah.
that he had, but this, you know, yeah. So you see what I mean? And it kind of has that whole theme of finding that light within the darkness, finding that poem within the darkness. I really also like magical, majestic moments, tempered time trembles, free-falling, fickle colors let go, dance divinely on brisk breezes. There's such a sense of freedom, this inner freedom. Just, you know, it's like in Disney's Fantasia, where they get to the scene where all the fairies are doing their little happy dances, or the hippos are doing their ballet. It's like that kind of happiness.
I like that. I really like that with these shows, I can be made to like reread and reestablish like my understanding of like a poem more than once. Because like James did that with his comment, and also you did with yours. Because reading through it with what you said about writer's block in the cold winter, and then, like, it really fits, even in the last stanza, rough drafts bleed seasonal stirrings. Just the act of writing starts to build in itself a fire of inspiration, and those seasonal stirrings begin again to lift you out of winter. Sorry, I'm commenting again. I just wanted to say, like, that was a really cool interpretation. Yeah.
Go for it. Yeah, absolutely. I like conversation and, you know, thoughts brought up. So that's really cool. I like that. But yeah, it's fun, because the thing is we all do that for each other. You know, we all have those moments where we learn something from each other, or see a poem in a different way. I like doing occasionally contests that have only one prompt, just to see how people take in different directions. So that's always cool.
You know, that last stanza kind of brings in another level, where he says rough drafts, bleeding seasonal stirrings, magical, majestic moments, tempered time trembles, free falling, fickle colors let go, dance divinely on brisk breezes, looking for a soft place to land in a world gone mad. That last line seems like there's like an extra layer other than just talking about the transition of seasons.
Yes. Yeah, it does, actually. It does. And I think you're right. I do. Knowing Stephen's poetry enough, I don't know it that well, but I've seen it enough that, you know, I have to agree with you. It does seem to be almost talking, not about just about writing, but this whole idea of perhaps a transition in life, or, you know, I mean, it definitely food for thought. That's for sure. And I like that. Great observations. All right. Up next, we have All Embracing Genre by Allie Gorey. And that, I have to say, is just one of the coolest all poetry monikers I have seen. Very cool. All right. And it goes like this. I remember how important poetry was to me before I even went to school. The history I imbued in loving nursery rhymes, which my parents explained were not always true. The fate of the poets across the ages for daring to speak against injustice, the lauding of physical acts of bravery, the guidance I received from Kipling's If, the love poetry of Byron and Shelley, that it had any effect on modern ladies, the adherence to duty of Felicia Hemans, Boys Stood on the Burning Deck, Tennyson's Charge of the Light Brigade. Poetry has had it all and shared it to all. I'm looking forward to not hearing Kipling's Le Nevoir at my funeral. From ancient Grecian wars, the devotion of Penelope, to eons hence with Kipling, for all people of all ages and all embracing genre and poem. Oh my goodness, trying to pronounce a French word in the middle of that totally threw me off. I'm sorry. But that was an amazing
I like
poem.
When you tried to give a French play to other words afterwards. That was really good.
I know, right? I can't switch that quickly. I'm like, you have made me go into my French accent, so now I must read everything in the French accent.
Sacre bleu.
Yeah. I am Pepe Le Pew. Yeah, exactly. but other than my absolute goofiness at trying to read a French word, what did you think of this poem here, Mika?
Well, first of all, she was reading Byron, Shelley, Tennyson, and Kipling before she went to school, because I think we might be dealing with a genius here. I don't think that's what she was trying to say. I just think it was funny that's how it comes across. But really, she's talking about the way that nursery rhymes resonate with you even before you understand their meaning. Like, remember how in middle school, like, everyone thought they were so clever when they finally, like, were talking about the meaning behind the ashes, ashes, we all fall down? But yeah. It didn't matter that you didn't know the history behind it. When you heard it, you still resonated with it. You still wanted to sing the skip rope chants, play Ring Around the Rosie, or what's the one where you have to come through, Red Rover, Red Rover. There's something like we were talking about at the beginning of the show that you tap into when it comes to poetry, and it's communicating on a level that's not just communicating information as in like a history. It's communicating feeling that doesn't necessarily communicate across other vehicles, I guess, if that makes sense. So I think it spoke to the prompt really well in that way. And I might not get all the references because I'm not the most well-educated or well-read person, but I still appreciated the ones that I did recognize being pulled in. And the way that she praised them was very specific to the power that they offered. The guidance I received from Kipling's If, the love poetry of Byron and Shelley, and there's this depth of appreciation for what each author brought to the table with their own unique perspective.
Absolutely, yes. I have to agree with you. This definitely had an emotional impact while at the same time paying tribute to some truly great poets throughout history. And James, your thoughts?
Well, a lot of the references to the different poets is kind of above my pay grade, but what I find fascinating is before she went to school, talking about the loving nursery rhymes with the parents explained were not always true. So they, like, cued her into reality that all this fantasy isn't exactly the way things really are. And also the fate of the poets across the ages for daring to speak against justice. So she was brought to contend to the consequences of standing up to injustice before she even was in kindergarten, according to this poem. And that's amazing.
That is. That, and absolutely. And I have to say kudos to her parents for taking time to talk to their children, not like as if their children were babies, but actually like, you know, people with actual thoughts and feelings, which they are. You know, I remember one of my friends saying the reason Pam's kids all say full sentences as toddlers is because Pam just never talks to them like they're babies. And, you know, I see that within these lines. And I like that you brought that up, James, the idea that her parents would explain things to her and talk to her about those nursery rhymes. And I really like how she expresses the importance of poetry in her life from a young age. As I said, some wonderful nods, you know, like Kipling, Byron, Shelley. I mean, so many great ones throughout. I really like the lines, the fate of the poets across the ages for daring to speak against injustice. I mean, we all have different reasons for writing poetry. You know, sometimes it's something to help ourselves heal from something. Sometimes it's just we want to have, you know, fun. We like playing with words. We like rhyming, you know. I mean, there's hundreds of reasons to write poetry. But I think if you have the gift to write poetry, if you have the gift to express yourself with language in a beautiful and provocative way, then, you know, maybe part of that is being, you know, called to use that poetry to speak up about injustice, to speak up about the things you see which need to be brought to other people's attention. And I did really like the humor in this and the love poetry of Byron and Shelley. Not that it had any effect on modern ladies. And that's a great sense of humor. And I think it depends on the lady.
Don't come quoting Shelley at me.
Yeah, right. I would fall for it. My two funniest, both one funny and cute and one kind of funny, sad experiences with love letters. And I don't know if I ever told you about this, Nika, was in third grade, I got a love letter from a boy in my class. And I don't remember what everything the letter said, but what it said is, "I love you because you have brown eyes like a puppy dog."
That's not the worst love letter I've ever heard.
Right? The worst love letter was when I was dating my ex, and why I stayed in that relationship, God only knows. But we had gotten into a fight, and he wrote me this big, long letter. Now, keep in mind, I had not read the Bible myself or very little of it. He wrote me this big, long love letter, and I thought it was so beautiful. Only to find out basically what he did is he copied the love chapter of the Bible, you know, Corinthians, whatever one it is. I can't remember exactly, but the love is not vain. Love does not think on itself, you know, blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right.
Yeah. So he basically
definitely
took and copied that word for freaking word and tried to act like it was a love letter to me. Oh, my God. That
so romantic.
I know, right?
Well, at least he didn't copy the Song of Solomon. We're talking about the emissions,
really
like donkeys.
Yeah. If he had written, "Your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon," I would have been like, what?
Yeah, it was always the timbers of Lebanon.
Is it the timbers? Okay, maybe it is the timbers. Yeah, well, I remember it had something to do with Lebanon. I remember the description of the woman's nose, or, you know, was in such a way that I was always thought, wow, you could tell she's Jewish, and I can make that joke since
oh
I'm half
Jewish. Oh my God, Pam.
I'm allowed. Probably not, but that's okay. Oh, my gosh. But, no, I hope Allie understands that my laughing is nothing to do with her poem. Except for she did bring that whole funny part up about not that it had any effect on modern ladies. But I really thought this was great. It's intelligent. It's humorous. And it's a great look at the importance of poetry. So wonderful, right? And very well done. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right. Oh, let's see here. Dark and Dora says, resonating with the nursery and then learning the truth of their meaning made it stick for me better than school. I like that. I like that. Yep. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have The Beat at Heart by Rue. And go ahead, Mika, please, and give that a read.
Beat at Heart. From fossil days, as woman nursed man's tribe, their heartbeats music served to soothe wild breasts, till beats could wend round minds with seashell sounds, thus penned. Man learned from woman's heart his verse. And man beat out rhythm in lilted words to protect the tribe, protect the herds, chanted magic across valleys and glens, desert, ice, the mountains, seas, the fens, and hymned thanks for meat, skins, and furs. Our beats gained freedom of the birds, soared, trilled, flew till all worlds heard. We have made chanted music our friend, as crooned words to our heaven ascend, sometimes soothed, sometimes stirred. And you can still hear us in the wind, the trees, and murmurings of honeybees, and poem.
Great read there, Mika. This is just absolutely stunning. I mean, amazing imagery throughout. And James, your thoughts?
Well, it's kind of interesting because it down the traditional roles of woman being the nurturer and man being the protector, which I found kind of interesting and surprising.
I like that. I like that. The observations on the breaking down the traditional roles, and that it is an unexpected take on the prompt. So great observation. By the way, James, I did want to mention that since you've called in, and since I don't have a huge amount of poetry, that if you want to share one of your writes, like you want to put a link to one of your writes on the topic board for Break On Through 9-1, you can do that. And me or Mika will be happy to share it or to read it for you, unless you want to read it.
Should I drop that in group chat or?
It would actually be like, when you look up and you see where it says topic board, you're right in Late Night Poets and it says topics, and the very first topic says Break On Through 9-1 Poetry Remembers and Molnar C. Powell. You would put it on there. All right, sounds good. And
but make
Mika,
him read it.
You did it.
I want to hear James read.
No, you don't.
Well, you have
I am too many beers
voice.
In to read.
You do have a good speaking voice, so, you know. But, Mika, your thoughts on this poem?
Okay, so this was really cool. I agree with James, but it speaks to, like, the traditional roles and how they kind of wove together in the beginning. That's what's so cool about your prompt, Pam, is that it brought us all back to the primal origins, because it was saying, you know, it was an oral art before it was a written art, but where is the origin of the oral art? And we get this, you know, in Rue's poem, a very primal tapping into that energy that we were talking about, where the woman is using it to soothe wild breasts and the man is learning heart from that verse and then beating out rhythm to express gratitude to protect. And from this utility, it then gains freedom of the birds and soars and trills until the whole world's heard. So I love that evolution from utility of calming the, you know, the survival instinct and the kind of the hyper arousal of the amygdala of the fight and flight to soothe that. And then the utility of communicating what's going on in order to protect the tribe or the herds, in order to express gratitude for what has been given. And then finally, the final evolution is the freedom of flight from those utilitarian kind of uses of music, song, poetry, into communication for communication's sake, into communication for whatever meaning we want to make out of it. I thought that was cool.
That is really cool, yeah. And I like that observation. I like how you use the word primal, because it does have a very primal feel to it. I also feel like there's kind of a sensuality to this. You know, the idea of the sensual exchange between man and woman and between humanity and nature, and humanity and poetry, and even the act of eating, providing, you know, all part of that essence of life. I was watching earlier today a YouTube video. It wasn't a TED Talk, but it was similar to that. But this woman was talking, she was an archaeologist, and she was talking about how difficult it is to date prehistory art, you know, because of the fact that it's there, you know, they're usually the paintings on the cave walls, and you can't just take them back to the laboratory. There's really no way to, like, really test them and their age, and because they're so oftentimes very simple and straightforward, you gotta look, you know, at obviously a lot of them are telling stories, but you gotta also wonder if there's something more. And one of the ideas she brought up was the idea of shamanism and the cave paintings being these visions that people were interpreting through the limited art abilities that they had at that time, because, you know, art was still a growing progress. And I feel there's some of that here at the whole idea of the primal feel of the poetry being created, because at first it's all about just the physical needs. You know, we have the meat, the skins, the furs, you know, there's these physical needs, but then it's almost as if at some point, ancient man and ancient woman got this yearning, and I don't know if yearning is the right word to use, but I'll go with, for something deeper than just physical needs being met, you know. So just an amazing write by Rue, and very well done.
Well, what's really interesting is there's this archaeological find in this cave where it was pre-human ceremonial burial. Like, before human beings, these hominids were burying their dead, and they were making marks and whatnot to indicate some sort of ceremony involved in the process.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty
cool.
Wild.
You know, history, I mean, is so fascinating, and archaeology and the things we're discovering, you know, it's amazing that, and it just puts you in with a sense of awe. You know, so
this next to last stanza in this poem, our gained freedom of the birds, soared, thrilled, flew till all worlds heard. We have made chanted music our friend, as croon words to our heaven ascend, sometimes smooth, sometimes stirred. The fact that it says specifically our heaven, like it's specific to the tribe or that we're talking about here. their personal heaven, and it doesn't belong to anybody else. I found pretty interesting.
I like that. I like that. Yeah, great observation on the idea of our heaven, their version of heaven, and what they see it as. Very cool.
I have to jump off of that really quick and say one more thing. That was a really cool comment, and I didn't notice that. And then when you take that with this, with the last stanza, I realize that she's bringing us back to the roots, though. And you can still hear us in the wind, the trees, and the murmuring of honeybees. So even though we have this freedom to take it to our own personal place, to say whatever we wish to say, to express whatever we wish to express, and to have whatever meaning that we imbue on the things that we're saying, whether it's like a tribe's like common belief, religion, whatever it is that we're using our poetry or our creation to express, you can still hear the roots of it, which is nature, which is what she brought out in the first part of her poem. The primal utility in it is still there, and all the roots whisper with that same music. So, yeah, I don't know. That was a cool comment.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's a tribe or a peoples that's no longer in existence, but you can still hear their reverberating through nature and whatnot.
Yeah.
I like that, yeah, because it's almost like that imprint, a kind of an imprint that's left behind even after people no longer exist. So, very cool. All right, well, up next we have Oral Poetry in the Beginning by Ima Rima, and it goes like this. Poetry remembers quite well that it began as an oral art. When Adam and Eve came to dwell in Eden was when it did start. Communication humans had by speaking words in place and time. God didn't realize how bad this would go in reason and rhyme. When some poetic words would take a devilish turn for the worse, started off by that sneaky snake and ending with words God did curse. So oral poetry did begin. Eve said to Adam, sin is in. End poem. Well, that was a fun and interesting and clever take on the prompt. I didn't think about going back to the Garden of Eden. I have to say, I like that couplet and the humor in it because it reminded me of, who is the guy who wrote the poem Fleas? You know, it's like Fleas. Adam had 'em. Selena just did a contest on him, and I'm blanking out on the name. But he's a famous.
I don't remember either, but I'm cracking up remembering it.
Yeah, right. Like that poem. The funny thing about that poem is, you go look up that poem, Fleas, and the whole poem is simply Adam had 'em, and it's got like on all poetry like thousands of comments. Thousands. It's insane. And I am looking here because I know she had her topic board up. And I wrote for that poem or that contest. Well, anyways, but great rhyme in this. I did like also where he says, this would go in reason. God didn't realize how bad this would go in reason and rhyme. And I don't think you need to believe in God to appreciate the whole idea that when language first started, we had no clue the kind of things that it could be used for. So clever write and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
I was going to go to the same part that you were, but I was getting something a little different from it. So it's cool in this how they equate like us discovering or creating poetry
with biting into the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. I really, really like that because communicating and in the previous poem by Rue, we kind of had that feeling of like, okay, it moved past utility and into this freedom. And with freedom comes the ability to make bad choices and good choices, as you were talking about, like, you know, things that we should never have said or things that, you know, God would never have, like, imagined us saying. And in this, it's equated with that fruit, the knowledge of good and evil, to communicate things with freedom, that God is banging his head and thinking, why did I even give them these tools? Because we use them for bad and for good, but in a chaotic way. Yeah, I don't know. I think that comparison is really cool when brought in with the prompt. And the fact that the first oral poem was Eve saying to Adam, sin is in, communicating to him, like, this knowledge is good, like, take a bite. I don't know. That's just, it was just really cool.
It is. And I like those observations. I know that, and yeah, very cool observations and the comparisons there. Great comment. And James, your thoughts.
Well, as an atheist, I love the idea of the power of mankind in tapping into knowledge kind of outdoes God. really, you guys made all the commentary that appropriate for this piece. I mean, the whole idea of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil being covered, and this would go into reason and rhyme when some poetic words would take a devilish turn for the worse. And Eve saying to Adam, sin is in. I mean, I think that pretty much covers it, that man is taking the power of language and authoring poetry beyond God's will.
I like that. Really, really thoughtful comment there. You know what it makes me think of? Do either of you, and I can't remember the title of it, but I think of, like, back in the 1980s, there was this movie, and it was about this couple who kept meeting over and over again in different lives. And, of course, so the first life they met in, they were Adam and Eve. Do either of you remember that movie?
Yes. What was that called? Something Map or something?
Yeah.
What was that?
I can't remember. I'm horrible with titles, horrible with names. but I just remember it was so funny. It was so interesting. And one of the most funny parts to me was when they were Adam and Eve and they were laying down together and he was laying behind her and he asks about her breasts, what are these for? And she looks down and says, I don't know. And then he grabs them with his hands and says, oh, that's what they're for. They're for holding.
Cloud Atlas.
And yes, that's it.
Yes. Yeah. Yep, that's it. No, oh, excuse me. All right. Let's see what we got next. All right. And all right, I think we are going to be on our last poem for this contest, and then we'll make sure, of course, to get Dark and Dora's and James in, and, you know, all that fun stuff. So, there might be, you know what, I'm betting there's more than one poem, because let's see, it says, Dark and Dora says, Fleas was apparently written by Strickland Gillian. I thought it was Ogden Nash. I could actually be wrong. I believe it or not, I have been wrong before. And Wikipedia says it was by Strickland Gillian. And that is possible. That is very possible that Wikipedia is right. But then again, it is Wikipedia, so it's, you know, always a gamble. But
Pamelicious,
yeah.
I cannot believe I heard those words cross your lips. You're practically perfect in every way.
I know. I'm like fucking Mary Poppins, you know.
Mary Poppins with a tire iron instead of an umbrella.
Yeah, right. Comes out swinging. Oh, too funny. Too funny. Oh, I got to try. Oh, I was trying to type and talk at the same time. Never a good thing. All right. So up next, we have The Roots of Poetry by Garden Delight. And Mika, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Okay, The Roots of Poetry. Let us return to our poetic roots, striding down that hallowed passageway to the verdant pasture of rich vocal deliveries, memorized literary gems, hieroglyph nowhere, untouched by quills. Unearth here aurally pleasing words as they pass through sensual lips into shared airspace. Let sibilant smoothness and staccato street corners define the alphabetical unleashing. Now the ewer of alliteration and assonance pours forth its warm liquid libations. Send out the dancing girls bedecked in pure white pinafores over colors of every kind. Let them stripe gray-blue the mockingbird's wing, lay emeralds across a hidden valley, or fleck bourbon and hazel eyes. Ride this journey of presentations into day, touching with reverence your latest home on poetry. So very thankful for this asset you can hold in your hands to read and recite. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Mika. And this is an absolutely beautiful write. And your thoughts, James?
Well, I almost lose meaning in the beautiful of the structure and the wording. I mean, let sibilant smoothness and staccato street corners define the alphabetical unleashing now the innuendo of, I mean, it's just this flowing of beautiful sounds that almost kind of just drowns out the meaning of the poem. But it's an amazing write. It really is.
It is. Like, I like that you pointed that out, the idea of how beautiful it is. Like when Mika said earlier about the other poem and how it's auditorially pleasing, you know, like you listen to it and you're so enchanted by the sound and the beauty of the poem. So great observation. And Mika, your thoughts?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say that I said when I was commenting on that earlier poem, orally pleasing, and immediately I was like, oh my God, that's like a sexual like innuendo, and like felt bad. But here, it's
I know, I,
here
bit my,
written,
I bit my tongue and didn't say anything.
now I have the last laugh because it is a word, orally pleasing, without being oral as in of the mouth, A-U-R-A-L-L-Y. And this is why poetry moved from a vocal oral art to a written art so that we could
right?
see these nuances.
yes, it is important to be able to see those.
But then she also said, as they pass through sensual lips, so I don't know if I have much of an argument there. I do think this poem is really beautiful. I appreciate what you said, James, about how you kind of could become awash in the beauty of the language and the imagery and then lose sight of the meaning. It reminds me of how, in personality studies, they talk about people who will really focus in and hone in with a very specific lens on details, and people who see a broader picture, but then kind of make up and invent connections in between things. Since they can't actually see the details of things, they just automatically like create patterns, and that could be accurate or not. And when you're listening to a poem like this, I think you're like, upon first listening, you're creating patterns
without actually honing in on the details of language, and you have to read multiple times to actually, like, get into the meat of what is being said. So I agree with you there. But I did like the line that you called out, "Let sibilant smoothness and staccato street corners define the alphabetical unleashing." Because it's talking about, I think, multiple genres of poetry, and the way that it talks about this evolution, because in the beginning we returned to our roots, but now we're past that narrow hallway that we were walking down from the roots and into this vibrant, like, viral spreading of language across so many genres, with the smooth, with the staccato, with the street corners, with the smooth, with the poetic, with the kind of highbrow, and all of it spreading from the same root, as a tree or an ivy. I liked it.
Very cool. I like that. Great observations there. Yeah, I thought she had wonderful use of devices like alliteration, imagery, metaphors, even personification. I really like how she looks at poetry as an exploration for all the senses. I really like send out the dancing girls bedecked in pure white pinafores over colors of every kind. Let them stripe gray-blue the mockingbird's wings, lay emerald across a hidden valley, or fleck bourbon in hazel eyes. It's through the use of language that we've been able to give so many different names and colors and, you know, visuals to things. Like, a lot of times, language is an important part of visualizing and using our imagination, really beautiful use of language all the way through. I also really like now the ewer of alliteration as a sense pours forth its warm liquid libations, and I like the idea of the warm liquid libations of, you know, being that soft touch, that idea of really warming up the poetic spirit. So wonderful write and very well done. All right. Let's see. All right. James, I'm going to put up your poem, Love Story. Do you think you would be able to give that a read for us?
I'll give it a whirl.
All right.
Let me pull
very
it up
cool.
real quick. Ooh. All right, here we go. He, a rib bone wraith, angel fine cropped above hawkish grace, duo of wash, faded blue, a birdcage encasing a lion's beat. He, a Roman statue, dark springs relaxing across an innocent moon, hair of soft brown fires, a cistern of compassion eager to be drawn from. They, the couple of ages, our faith and love without blemish made flesh. A love story writ to give witness, an evangelist to the assurance of things hoped for. A love story shared with a people that have judged themselves unworthy of liberation. They, the blameless lovers made to suffer for the sake of others, evermore disentwined. A people preferring the bondage of ignorance have snuffed a pure and vital light. Our world dimmed, our path darkened, for we are less illusion gospel.
Great read there, James. I'm really glad you shared this with us. And Mika, your thoughts?
Oh my God, this was sick. Sick. I fucking love that you brought in a write that brought such notes of Adam and Eve, and then took a completely different track with them. He, a rib-boned wraith, what a cool way to bring in Adam's rib, and then a birdcage encasing a lion's beat. is such a cool way to talk about the courage that it took to stand up to literal God and say, I want the knowledge. I will take it. I will take the first bite. I don't know. That was the courage encased in a rib cage. And you brought in, like, the imagery, like, subtly, but it was also, like, saturated with the story of Eden and the fall of man. The fall of man, but in this poem, you frame it as not a fall, but instead blameless lovers made to suffer for the sake of others, ever more disentwined, because everyone who hears the story judges themselves unworthy of the same liberation, unworthy of taking that bite of the knowledge of good and evil, and instead preferring the bondage of ignorance. So freaking cool. I fucking love this piece.
I have to agree. Absolutely. Great observations there, Mika, especially in the whole idea of seeing it, the beginning, at, you know, not as the fall of mankind, but rather as an opportunity for mankind to venture out and think on their own. I really like the title Love Story, but it's more than a love story between two people, because it is a love story between two people, but it's also the idea of a love story for yourself, a love story for humanity, and the way you can learn to embrace your inner light and find guidance through that rather than through these strict religious rules and regulations. And I really like the imagery metaphors in this. I have to say, he, a rib-boned wraith, angel fine, cropped above hawkish grace, is definitely an attention-capturing line. I also really like a love story writ to give witness and evangelist of the assurance of things hoped for, a love story shared with the people that have judged themselves unworthy of liberation. And how often do we think ourselves unworthy of those things which, you know, we should naturally embrace as a beautiful part of ourselves, like the questioning, the answer-seeking side of ourselves. So amazing, right, and very well done. And James, did you want to say anything about your poem?
Basically, it's romance between two gay men that society has decided is not acceptable and has caused them to separate. And it was a pure and wholesome love between the two of them, but because they were amongst people that didn't accept them, they were forced to separate from each other. And we lost that story of true love.
Isn't that a sad thing? And that does happen. That does happen. You know, people get judged, and when all they really have is a good, wholesome, you know, dedicated relationship. And I personally guess I totally missed that, but I'm glad you said something about your poem, because that really opened up the different message that came across. But really cool and very well done.
Okay, well, if it's Adam and Steve, it's Adam and Steve, but I'm still getting Garden of Eden vibes.
It does have a garden, yeah. No, I can't deny you that, and I still agree with that. It does have a Garden of Eden type vibe, but obviously, yeah, Adam and Steve. But, very cool. Well, we're now going to go on to the next contest, which is the art of Molnár Sipál, who was a Hungarian surrealist artist. And he painted for so many years. Like, I think he started painting when he was a teenager and lived to a good old age of his 80s or something, 90s. And He went through all different kinds of forms. He even went through a really religious time period with his paintings, so I didn't put a lot of those prompts up. But he was most known for his surrealism art, and I do highly recommend, you know, if anybody hasn't seen his artwork, check it out. Definitely worth looking at, and fascinating stuff. And the first poem I have up for that contest is The Battle of Balance by Darkened Auras. And it goes like this. Balanced horses, good and bad, went to a castle for downtrodden. Exhausted riders, lost and sad, were murdered there and forgotten. This place was to be a beacon of light where refuge could always be found. But a bloody battle on a full moon night woke spirits who once slept sound. White horses, pure as winter snow, unleashed the horrors and lost the battle. Black horses, dark as inks that flow, fled with Ghost Rider upon its saddle. The battle was started by Ivory, a horse evil to her very core. Had it all planned out, connivory, she thought she'd win for sure. Ebony, the dark horse of the family, with nary any hatred in her heart, left the castle full of apathy. Their balance rocked and fell apart. End poem. And wonderful poem there, Christina. I'm very glad she was inspired, and I do appreciate her hanging out in the chat in Late Night Poets. And James, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, you know,
oh, did you accidentally put yourself? Oh no, he dropped. Okay, Mika, your thoughts?
Oh, well, okay. So this is a really cool write, especially to the prompts. It seems very straightforward, of a battle in front of a castle. There's like a fantasy element, but maybe it's my childhood trauma speaking, but I kind of got the sense of the golden child and the scapegoat in a family. And the way that when the dark horse or the black sheep of the family walks away, it takes the heart out of what keeps the family together, because the way that a scapegoat keeps everything together is being the target, so that everyone else who's rocking the boat, the black sheep of the family, is balancing out. So in the end, when it says no hatred in her heart, she left the castle full of apathy, not hatred, just indifference and an unwillingness to engage in the drama anymore. And the balance rocked and fell apart because there was no counterbalance to the shiftings of everyone else kind of creating conflict. So I got this kind of, maybe I've been going to therapy too long or something, but that's the vibe I got from it.
You know what? I have to agree with that, especially when you bring in the end lines, you know, where it says, Ebony, the dark horse of the family, with nary any hatred in her heart, left the castle full of apathy. Their balance rocked and fell apart. So here's the black sheep of the family who's rejected for who she is, you know. Even though, you know, she's never had hatred in her heart, she's still judged for being the dark horse, the black sheep. You know, as always, this has amazing rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery, a great storytelling write. I really liked, first of all, I have to say, I really like Darkened Aura's observations on the prompts and her excitement for the contest, because she had commented, while there are a few differences, but prompt 14 looks like a before and prompt 13 looks like an after, you know, and she says, like two horses, black and white, before coming to the castle, and horses leaving the castle in separate ways after what looks like a bloody battle. Very cool. I may try to incorporate the two into one poem if I can. And she did do that, and she did a wonderful job of that. Creating that before and after, that battle. And I like that it's, you know, it's a tale that can be mythological, but it's also a very metaphorical piece, as you were mentioning. it is that idea, feeling rejected. White horse is pure as winter snow, unleashed the horrors and lost the battle. Black horse is dark as inks that flow, flooded with Ghost Rider upon its saddle. The battle was started by Ivory, a horse evil to her very core. So, it's almost like the horse version of like the movie Heathers or Mean Girls or, like the whole idea. It's like the one that nobody expects to be the evil one turns out to be it. It's to me, the whole thought of learning to see what's on the inside, to see what's on the heart and not judge by the surface. So wonderful, right? And very well done. All right. Let's see here. What do we got next? Aha. Here we go. All right. And we have Haunted Castles by Betty Page. And go ahead, please, Mika, and give that a read. You didn't drop too, did you?
Oh, sorry. No, I was just on mute. My bad.
Okay. Oh,
okay. Okay, here we go. Haunted Castles by Betty Page. Moonlight's enchantment, winding my way towards castles, dark, mysterious, and wells of sadness will puncture hearts deep in love, spray crimson on walls. In twisted chambers, those luxurious dungeons, let revelry rule. Mystical islands enchant desire's passion, debauchery rides. Phantasmagoric sentimental timepieces illuminating, violent daydreams, ghosts still drift along the seas. Embrace illusions. Wearing golden crowns, adorned in jewels and fine gowns, shimmering, haunted. Where your castles hide, let me in beyond your walls. Embrace me vivid. Intoxicate me. Paint me with your poison kiss. Twist your tongue real deep. Me so intrigues lick up desires divine. Yin-yang horses ride. Briar patch tangles. Razor-sharp thorns crucify as madness resides. And poem.
Great read there, Mika. There's definitely a magical mysticism and sensuality to this. I like the way Betty tells a story with 5-7-5 lines, and she certainly never holds back when it comes to sensual expression. I really like the use of the word phantasmagoric. Phantasmagoric, sentimental timepieces illuminating, violent daydreams, ghosts still drift along the seas, embrace illusions. That whole idea of the holding on to between the veil, like not letting go into the next life, but rather, that idea of the idea of the ghosts that stay behind because they suffered a traumatic experience. I don't know. I just really like the imagery. I really like, in wells of sadness will puncture hearts deep in love, spray crimson on walls. Very, vampiric type lines there. Very, there is almost the whole idea, I think, of people who have died a violent death. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Mika?
Oh, I like when you called it vampiric. I got that same sense. It really had a very macabre tone. I think my favorite part, though, is when instead of being, dark, mysterious, in the first half of the poem, she says, embrace me vivid. Embrace me with all of my sides, all of my colors. So there's the sense of coming out of whatever walls that you had up to try to hide the more unpalatable parts of yourself. No, embrace me vivid.
embrace me with all of those parts shining and completely naked, completely visible. I really liked that part.
That is really cool. That is really cool. And I like that you bring that up because it does bring into the poem a sense of wanting to be vulnerable, or, you know, a willingness to be vulnerable with someone. So very cool. Very cool. Great observations. All right. And now the question is did I go and grab the next poem? Yes, I did. Look at that. Yeah. Of course, I have to waste time figuring out if I actually did that, but, you know. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that both you and James could call in tonight, since obviously Rex is, I don't know, getting some sleep or something. Like, how dare he? How dare he sleep?
I texted him, wake up, Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, right? I kind of imagine it probably was, like, really hot there, and I know that can throw you for a loop with that hot weather, so hopefully he's getting some much-needed rest. All right, this is Fight or Flight by Diane D. Atop a liquid ice white moon, sit clouds in Earl Grey steel, razors etch smears oblique, skies paint what seems real. Slender and naked are trees, standing mute, black there. Creeds are hushed of voices. Of this estate there is no air. Streaks for those who mask and hide out in castle walls. On winding roads steeds run, if comes a storm flight calls. Turn the back, walk anew then, dance through canvas cracks. There are no stars in their sky, no story there to fit the facts. But dawn arrives for everyone whose moon's been put to bed. Don't take today into tomorrow. That next journey is now unread. End poem. And Mika, your thoughts?
Oh, this is cool rhyme. I like that it, I don't know, there was another piece, Auras, earlier that had like kind of that fantastical sense, like where you almost feel like you're reading a story of the Round Table or something. But within this one, there is such beautiful imagery. Canvas cracks. There are no stars in the sky. I love that. And also, but dawn arrives for everyone whose moon's been put to bed. So there's this like really beautiful use of language in it and wonderful storytelling.
It is. It is. Yeah, I like the rhyming. I like the storytelling. The title was great. Fight or Flight. The whole idea of how when under pressure we have those two main reactions. I really like Streaks for Those Who Mask and hide out in castle walls. On winding roads steeds run. If comes a storm, flight calls. You know, so there's that whole idea. Those are those who hide behind their castle walls, you know, and those who perhaps are either trying to run away from the challenge, or perhaps the running represents, you know, facing the challenge head on instead of hiding behind the walls. I also really like creeds are hushed of voices. Of this estate, there is no air. So, you know, when it says of this estate, there is no air, you think, well, here's a story that isn't going to continue because the lineage isn't going to continue. So wonderful, right? And very well done. All right.
Great comment.
And, well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, great poetry tonight for sure. All right. Up next, we have Open Wounds Heal Slowly by King. And go ahead, please, Mika, and give that a read.
Okay, Open Wounds Heal Slowly. an open wound, saline sprayed, sealed, dressed, hidden, awaiting the mend of time. Life was once warm company, till agony of claim and counter and shared words of blame, storm's pain rolled in, asunder racked the china, cracked sweet our porcelain teacups. So long they sat in quiet pain, cracked, unclaimed, growing stains, until the leak split in two, but wound of me, and somewhere across the china cabinet, you. The lonely broken edges, jagged, razor sharp, still beautiful, they reach for each other's mend while supping tea from leaking cups. End poem.
Great read there, Mika, and what a beautiful write by Kang. I really like the imagery in this, and the painting, or the drawing he chose to write to, the etching. You know, I really feel like his poem, his word choices, has captured the emotional impact. Like, you got these two people sitting on a bench together, and it's almost like there is, you know, it's difficult to tell, but, you know, you could almost see them smiling, but at the same time, the way they're hunched forward, there's almost a sense of, in their body language, of grief. And I really like this all the way through, but I especially like where it says, storm's pain rolled in as thunder racked the china, cracked sweet our porcelain teacups, and then split into the open wound of me and somewhere across the china cabinet, you. This whole idea, I think, of the storm of life that broke two people apart. You know, just amazing emotive lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Mika?
Yeah, absolutely. I was drawn to the same parts that you were, especially with the prompt painting, being those two people so clearly in pain, but just sitting next to each other, just kind of existing in that pain together. But in this poem, you see they're existing in that pain alone, even knowing that the other person is cracked and unclaimed as well. And then in the end, there's the hope of them reaching for each other's mend, supping tea from leaking cups. So even when the relationship has reached that breaking point, there is a way to come back for it as long as you reach for each other's mend, as long as both of you are hoping for the best for the other. I thought it was really beautiful, so unique in the metaphor that it used. I mean, because we've read about, like, all kinds of broken things in poetry. But to read about two broken teacups sitting across from each other in the china cabinet in relation to a relationship breaking, I felt was really original.
It was. I have to agree with you. And I do like when originality comes into play with poetry. So very cool. Very cool. All right. Up next, we have Death in the Wind by Jenny the Deep. Creeping up inside me, the sickness is spreading, slowly sinking, suffocating, anticipated my death for so long. I don't mind laying in the dark. My eyes grow heavier. The reaper is creeping, floating on in the wind, blood dripping with disdain, draped in ivory cashmere shame. Blamed for it all as I hang here waiting, holding on to my last of breath. Toxic temptation takes away my life, floating. Heads roll on the floor. Seeing such a demise, a fatal betrayal from loved ones. I was wrong to think I was safe with them. Twisting a knife, they stabbed my back. Crimson webs of blood cling like lace to haunted heads. And poem. And your thoughts, Mika?
This was interesting. I thought it was strange how in the beginning the narrator is anticipating death for so long. It's like they got used to the waiting part. It's like, you know, the reaper is creeping. It was almost like they were hoping he was. And then all of a sudden, when someone comes in willing to take their life, when someone is in the midst of betraying them, even though they prepared themselves with the anticipation of this happening,
there's a sudden shock of like, no, it's really happening. I think when we think of preparing ourselves for the worst, we think that it will help, right? We think that if we have low expectations, then when the worst happens, it will be less hurtful, it will be less impactful. But in this poem, I think it brings up that no, it's not, because you become too used to the worst expectations never becoming fulfilled. And then all of a sudden when they do, it's shocking.
You know what? I like that. And I can actually really relate to that. I am one of those people that when I get happy and excited about something, if things go wrong, I get these drops, like, you know, and not like bipolar, you know, but just the fact that I get myself so set up for how things are going to go a certain way, and then it doesn't happen that way. I also think, and I like what you had to say, it's almost like here's the idea of somebody who is romanticizing the idea of death, thinking that death is going to take them away from all their problems, only to realize that's not necessarily what they wanted. What they wanted is for their family and friends not to betray them. I really like the imagery in draping up, in ivory cashmere shame, you know, and then where it says like lace to haunted heads, it almost feels like the imagery of the cashmere shame and the lace to haunted heads almost feels like the idea of a woman betrayed on her wedding night, like left at the altar. A wonderful dark rite. And very well done.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt your comments. Sometimes I just feel like a visceral reaction to them.
No, it's actually good. Yeah, you know, it's good to hear sounds in the background, because otherwise I would think I was talking to myself. So, which I
you are. I'm your conscience.
Yeah, oh dear, I'm in trouble. If you're my Jimmy Cricket, I'm in trouble. Oh my gosh! All right. All right. Well, this next one's a poet I haven't seen in a while. I mean, I'm sure he's been active, but I think it's been a while since I've seen him write for a show. So very cool here. And let me get this blinked up. And I see Jenny in the room. Hello, Jenny. Good to see you. And next up, we have Drawing Water from the Well by Daylight Stevens, another cool all poetry moniker. And Mika, would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please?
Yes. Okay, so Drawing Water from the Well. Women pull water from the well, wheel the bucket, rope and chain, fill the jars of clay for all, sing hymns to the security of walls, trees, crops, orchards, sun and rain. The artist has removed the dark and imprint sweet scenery of the age. All is well for a certain class, and today the landlord on the hill has let the peasants have their fill, and shared prosperity's gainful wage. End poem.
Great read there, Mika. This is wonderful. He took the picture of the women taking the water from the well, and I like how he tells a story with brevity. Wonderful rhyme and flow. Wonderful imagery. And he brings so many characters in. This actually, you know what this kind of reminds me of? Is it makes me think of the song All Along the Watchtower, where different characters are brought in. We have the women, we have, you know, the artist, the landlord, and the peasants. And so, you know, it really, to me, does have that All Along the Watchtower vibe, which, of course, was genius lyrics written by Bob Dylan, but best sang, of course, by Jimi Hendrix, in my opinion, you know. And I really like this all the way through. All right. Well, good. I'm glad you agree, because, yes, definitely. And that's unanimous. So But I really especially like the artist has removed the dark and imprint sweet scenery of the age. The idea that not only paying tribute to the artist who did the painting itself, but to really to all artists who have that opportunity to bring enlightenment. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And Nika, your thoughts.
Okay, so I took a completely different track with the line that you just called out, where the artist hides the dark parts and only highlights the bright in that painting. Because what he's saying, I think, in this poem is basically in the painting, the women are drawing water from the well. Oh, good. They get their clay pots full. They're singing praises to the protection of the walls. Basically, oh, everything's fine. We're good. Like, we like our oppressor because we have this protection, this security. But when you look a little deeper into what was actually going on, like, this was one of the limited times because it was going to be visible, because an artist was portraying it, that the landlord actually let them take their fill of water, actually let them gain the resources that they needed. And there's this undercurrent of the power dynamic being very abusive, being something that could never be portrayed in the art of the time because of that very power dynamic that was there. Because the landlord had the power to cut off the water, to cut off the protection of the walls that the women are singing about. So I got this very different sense from that of the artist portraying what the people in power and what the elite wanted portrayed.
I really like that, and like you had said to James earlier, that really helped me to see the poem in a new way, in a new light. And yeah, and I can definitely, that really makes sense, especially if you continue reading where it says all is well for a certain class, you know, that there, that's the idea, as you were saying, of that those lies, those cover-ups that you know, speak on that, you know, who has the power and, you know, who is, you know, basically being manipulated. And, you know, just, it's really got a strong sense of injustice within the voice now that when you brought that up. So, and even, you know, where it says sing hymns to the security of walls. You know, walls are security, but at the same time, they can be that representation of a prison. So, really
yeah.
Cool observations there, Mika. I like that.
Thanks, Pam.
All right, let's see. All right, do-do-do-do-do. Wrong group. Let's try this again. All right.
Come on. Oh my God,
all
I was
right.
On you, huh? Sorry.
No, we all heard you like talking to your sweet little puppy.
He's being a jerk. So, he's not being a sweet little puppy right now, but yes.
Yes. Well, this is yes. By S. Sharp. We sit on the park bench in this black and white romance, your head bowed as if praying, counting the scribbles on the ground, life wasted in graphite, bundled winter coat, distant virtues of fall, leaves of trees and bushes, ready to surrender, while artists sketch hope like summer will never end. Scribbling dark shadows along the path, couples go arm in arm, jotting light in dark moments, hung in a hardwood oaken frame. End poem. And isn't it just always fascinating to see how two people will take the same prompt in different directions. And Mika, your thoughts on this poem?
Oh, you're so right. The way that this one has like a togetherness, even if it has some of like the sadness that we saw in the earlier poem on the same prompt, it's a sadness that's shared and therefore halved. Where in the other one, there was like the sense of isolation from the other person, even if they experience the same lightning strike and the same cracks. So in this one, there's like this more of a sense of a lightness of a shared burden, and a togetherness that outlasts and trumps whatever obstacles are coming their way. But great read, Pam, and excellent poem, S. Sharp.
Absolutely. And I like that, the shared burden that creates a strength. I really like the imagery in this. And especially when he says in the beginning, we sit on the park bench in this black and white romance, your head bowed as if praying, counting the scribbles on the ground, like life wasted in graphite. And I like life wasted in graphite because it feels to me like the whole idea of somebody who only experienced life through reading, you know, through secondhand experiences rather than getting out there. I do like the image also, the romanticism of couples go arm in arm, jotting light in dark moments hung in a hardwood oaken frame. And the idea of the pictures hung in the oaken frame makes me think of the whole idea of just capturing that relationship and that connection and you know, just holding on to it. So wonderful, right? Very well done. All right.
Great comment, Pam.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And we are definitely, just awesome poetry tonight. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, with awesome prompts, that's what you get. You're the prompt queen.
That's right. You give what you get. Get what you give or something like that. All right. We have up next Dolly Dancing with Paul Cézanne by Bill Schiller. And go ahead, Mika, and give that a read, please.
Okay. Dolly Dancing with Paul Cézanne. Provincial Pursuits and M.C. Escher engraved excellence. Molnar Pahl's art raves in muted hues of iridescence. Classic art architecture combines with naturalist absent unrealistic embellishment. Delicate details and abstract and natural forms. Brilliance born from Molnar C. Pahl's hand. A Hungarian artist's canvas has caught not to be imagined. Salvador Dali dancing with Paul Cézanne. As plain air host post-impressionism via landscape and mortal interaction, Molnar Pahl commands attention. Many masters of mixed media couldn't match his precise sleight of hand for graphic diversity on display. The visions of Molnar C. Pahl dwell between dreams and memory. His art is felt in the same degree as seen. End poem.
Great read there, Mika. And a wonderful tribute right by Bill. And Bill did say he would try to call in, but obviously either his power got knocked out, though I did see him earlier today in L&P, and he did say he made it through the hurricane, so that's good. I'm glad him and his friends and family made it through. I do like this tribute right, and I like how he staggers his lines and the nice touches of alliteration. And I thought it was really cool the way he compared the Molnar Pahl's artwork to Salvador Dali dancing with Paul Cézanne. I think that's a very captivating way to describe his art. I also really like the end lines with the visions of Molnar C. Pahl dwell between dreams and memory. His art is felt in same degree as seen. And I think that's truly the trait of so many good artists, is you should not only be able to look at it and intellectually observe it, but you should be able to emotionally observe it. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And Mika, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's cool to read a lot of poems that take a more abstract or philosophical or maybe less literal approach to the prompt, and then to come to this one that's literally just paying homage to the art itself and the artist who created it. And I really like that there's this, when he said muted hues of iridescence, there's kind of a contradiction there, but it exists in the paintings because you have this iridescent landscape with a muted focal point in a lot of those pictures that you posted. So I really liked it.
Me too. And great observations there. Our last two poems are slightly longer ones, and I don't want to have to rush through comments because they're both worthy of, you know, getting decent, not rushed comments. And those are by Thomas B. and Blue Harrison. So I'll bring those to Tuesday's After Midnight show. Great show tonight. Thank you so much, Mika and James, for calling in. Thank you to Darkened Auras and Jenny for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We really appreciate you all. Also, make sure to keep an eye out on all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. You can join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And then you can join myself and Dexter for at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday, Eastern U.S. time, for Once Upon a Time, Shamanism and the Medicine Man. And there is still room in that contest if anybody is inspired to write on that topic. And thank you very much, Mika. And have a good night, everyone.
Great show, Pam. Excellent poetry, excellent prompts. Of course, that's what brings the poetry, and wonderful, incisive comments.